This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Friday. My name is Jeff Sandhu and welcome to BizBytes. On the show with me today is
Audrey Raj,
Arvind Ivaraj.
And it's because it's Friday, we've got some really interesting stories about Singapore deploying some robots in the water.
Yes.
And we'll give you a bit of hint. And then Google, they want you to build AI algorithms, so it's super easy now. It's just going to be drag and drop. And then Arvind, you'll be talking about some asteroid mining.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of the show, Audrey, you will be giving us a digital detox, some of the apps that we should delete on our phone.
Yes, for your own good.
For our own good. And of course, being a Friday, when you head towards the weekend, we do have podcast essentials. So we will be highlighting three of the 20 over podcasts in a week that we do.
Mm-hmm. About 20, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it might be too flooded in your inbox, so we'll give you three podcasts that you have to listen throughout the weekend. But let's start with our neighbors down south.
Yes.
And what are they planning to do? Because it just looks like...
Robots in the water.
Robots in the water.
Yeah, yeah. So five robots designed to resemble swans are to be used at various reservoirs in Singapore to test and monitor raw water quality. So Singapore's National Water Agency, PUB, they're calling these swans the Smart Water Assessment Network, or SWAN.
Right.
And these robots will operate by trawling designated areas of water, collecting samples, and wirelessly sending back data through cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
So the robots will be remotely controlled. They will mostly operate autonomously. They require very basic monitoring and they operate via internet connection.
Mm.
Great,
mm.
right?
Mm.
So this technology was jointly developed by the NUS, National University of Singapore's Environmental Research Institute, and the Tropical Marine Science Institute.
The thing that gets me with this, though, like I'm looking at the image here, it actually resembles a swan,
yeah.
a real swan. Like I thought, like first, you know, initially I thought like it's like a marketing gimmick. But
it's just called swan.
It's called swan, and then you found out it actually stands for Smart Water Assessment Network, hence swan. But then when you see the product, it actually is a swan.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was wondering, like, why would they need something like this in the first place, right? Well, according to this article, physically having to collect samples from large water bodies with a boat, like how I guess we would do, it actually creates a logistical challenges for the authorities. So these swans can actually save time, manpower, and money. And the deployment of the swans also shows, I guess Singapore's willingness to invest in and deploy new technologies if it can actually save them time and money. Plus, you know, I mean, it looks nice right on the water.
Yeah. Even if they're robotic swans, it's still an attraction.
Yeah, but did they say why it looks like swans? Like specifically why it has to look like the bird?
I guess because it's aesthetically pleasing as well.
They're pretty though, right?
Yeah.
When you see a swan, you go like, aww.
Well, everybody would go like, aww, except for Christine Wong, who calls them big murderous birds. Or the Liam Neeson of birds.
See, I don't think they're targeting people like Christine to actually come and visit. I think it's just more for the general audience.
Yeah. I think they look pretty and they're actually serving a purpose. So, you know, it's a win-win.
Yeah, yeah. Very clever. But again, I think we really want to find out why swan of all animals.
Mm.
Why go for a swan? Or maybe just because it's in the water. So it looks like a swan in the, you know, just floating around. And it's Singapore, so I'm not surprised.
But it's also scary if the swan doesn't quite swim like a swan, right? And if it does a bit of a weird robotic movements, like imagine if the head could just suddenly turn around and, you know, because it's a robot, right?
You
know, it goes into some malfunctioning mood, then it just looks like a real scary swan. And then I think Christine is right then, you know, so she may have a point at the end of the day.
Oh, like robot flying swans if they take off from the water into the air, you know.
Don't give these people ideas, guys.
Well, you know what, in the future it might be easy to build something like that, because Google, moving on to our next story, Google, they want to make building AI algorithm as easy as drag and drop. So on Thursday, they announced the Cloud Auto ML, which is a cloud service program that allows average folks like you and me to train custom AI algorithm using files that we upload. So the service will start with still images, but Google plans to expand this technology to all of its AI offering, such as translation and also video processing. Now, This is, you know, AutoML is geared towards people who want advanced image recognition, but they don't have the expertise to build it. So, for example, you know, the users want to build an algorithm that doesn't just identify an image of a bird. You want to identify, like, the species of the bird. Like, is this like a blue jay bird or a parrot and something like that. So, you know, AutoML was built off research conducted by Google, and the research created 1,000 algorithms. And using Darwin's theory of evolution, it then made these 1,000 algorithms to compete on a specific task like image recognition. And the winner was then used as the baseline for 999 new algorithms and so on and so on. So it keeps building and building and building. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's where we probably also have to sort of just raise the alarm flags and like, I think probably there's some stop level here. You know? Even when you do trading, so there's a stop limit. I think for AI, there's a stop limit that we got to put in here. But, you know, the business of putting AI into cloud is not something new. It's been a huge thing. I remember when I was in AWS event, AI was such a big thing in cloud. And Microsoft is also pushing, you know, AI into cloud. It's giving them like a new exposure of people who, you know, regular folks like me and you would never subscribe for a cloud service here.
Yeah.
You know, but if there is a chance that, you know, we could play around with an AI algorithm, if it's just as easy as drag and drop, if you want to train your AI to learn about your own self or how you would like in your home, for example, you know, you probably could just feed the AI with the layout or pictures of your home, and then the AI could then, you know, sort of cater to your tastes, and it's just as simple as drag and drop. And, you know, if you could do things like that, that solves so much of problem, because, you know, you don't need to worry about programming. Who says you need to learn about programming and all when you have drag and drop?
So that's the thing. This might be a silly question, but why, if you're looking at making something so simple like drag and drop for the regular people like you and me, but what would we be using this kind of AI for in our daily lives? Why would I need such a function, or what would I do with this?
Well, you know, it's creating something that will be based on your own specific needs. So it
your
doesn't
own reference.
Yeah, your own reference. So you're building a model that is, you know, your own algorithm. So when you're running, for example, if you're running like a startup that does food delivery, and you want to sort of know what's the best route to take, or, you know, what's like a, what kind of a food that this area would probably prefer and stuff. In terms of building an AI to understand this, you got to do a lot of programming. But what if there's an easier way of building all this programming without the knowledge of programming? It's just a simple of, you know, feeding it maybe with a URL link, or, you know, maybe photos of the surrounding, or, you know, pictures of the people who are there and, you know, the things that they do by just typing in, like, you know, these people drive X, you know, a particular type of car, and, you know, these are, you know, the type of houses they live in. It could then generate a lot of, you know, information more detailed than what we could do. Right?
And to manually input.
And to manually input. And, you know, so imagine for researchers who are built, like, you know, for going back to the example of birds, imagine if a researcher who wants to, you know, find out what types of bird there is in this kind of forest, right? And then, you know, the AI would just go like, what bird are you looking at? And like, you know, if I don't know the name and stuff, I could just drag and drop. I could just take a photo of that particular bird, and then it will straight away immediately pull out like, right, okay, so this bird, this is the name, this is where it came from. That learning curve for AI is just, the barrier is just so much more easier if you could just drag and drop. So I get everyone's just trying to make AI easy. And, you know, Google being Google, it's as simple as a Google search, right? You know, search engine was a real difficult thing to do, but Google just makes it look so easy with such a simple web face, right? It's just Google with the box in the center. But what's behind this is the gem. What's in front of it is just so easy.
It's what everybody sees, It's just like websites. Like before, like no one knew how to build websites. But now you can just drag and drop. Like you have like Squarespace.
It's so easy.
It's just anyone who wants a website can just go open a blog or website. You know, and it look very nice with all the HTML5 stuff and all. You don't need to know HTML5 anymore.
Which leads me to a weird thing, because I have an issue with badly designed websites. And there are some really badly designed websites that are locally as well. So, and like, I'm just wondering, it's like, guys, come on. Like, you know, my nephew who's like 9 could probably build a better site than this, because it's just drag and drop. There's so many services. There's even an AI service to build a website.
Your website,
You just tell it, you know, what kind of things you like, and over the number of, you know, things that you've uploaded, it will build a site that is, you know, meant to be consumed in the best way possible with the best layout possible. So you don't even have to worry about layout if you don't have any design knowledge in you. just, you know, feed it with 1,000 photos and, you know, all your articles and stuff. It will decide for you how your website should look like. So, yeah, our brain doesn't quite need any work then in the future. Huh? Hmm. Mm. Anyways, we'll go for a short break. And when we come back, we will talk about how we would make a cleaner planet by mining...
And faster internet.
And faster internet. Mm. Oh, that's just weird. By mining asteroids.
Asteroids, yeah.
Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Bloggers for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Arvin and Audrey. Arvin, I want faster internet.
Yes.
Everyone does. I want a cleaner planet as well.
Yes, yes.
But it looks like I got to go out of space to get this.
The solution is out of this world.
go on.
They are saying that, so according to this academic researcher, his name is Philip Metzger, he wrote on Quartz that mining asteroids can bring benefits like cleaner planet and faster internet speeds and faster data. So there are a few companies and a few governments as well already working to make asteroid mining an actual thing, like a real thing. It sounds very complicated.
Yeah.
But it sounds like an episode of Armageddon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or some
Battlestar Galactica.
90s sci-fi movie where they're always shooting some asteroid. But the actual truth is, he says that asteroid mining is actually a very simple, small-scale operation that only needs simple to modest technology.
Ooh.
Yeah, nothing too advanced. The only problem is it might not arrive soon enough to address the urgent resource challenges that the world is facing now.
That's so, the only problem, not getting into space.
No.
He
says that the biggest thing is people want to mine asteroids and they want to bring the platinum back. But because transporting it is so expensive, so they don't... They feel it's not worth it, because if they can sell platinum here, then they would do it. But the thing is,
Is there a need or a use case for
it's it'll be like diamonds.
Ah.
But the problem is, once you learn how to mine one asteroid, then you can mine every asteroid, then you get too much platinum, and then there's no value for platinum anymore. So no one sees the... No government or no company sees the value there. But he is saying...
Space junk, basically, right?
Yeah, space
junk.
It's
just junk that, you know, we can't get now, but you know, later on, it's
So he's saying that there are other benefits there that no one wants to look at because they don't see a profit. So some of the benefits of asteroid mining, he says, is something like water. So you won't think that we need water at all because of how much water we have on Earth. But for rocket scientists, water is the raw material for propellant. Launching water from Earth into space consumes a lot of propellant, which defeats the purpose altogether. So the good thing is water is abundant in space, and it's much easier to move around. So water can be extracted from something like carbonaceous asteroids, I think that's how you say it. So once they separate that from the minerals, the water can be split by electrolysis into hydrogen and oxygen to make rocket propellant.
Right.
Yeah. So
this is then become rocket fuel.
Rocket fuel, yeah. So like, let's say like there's a mining company. They can sell the water in space to transportation companies, which will use it to refuel a shuttle that's parked in the orbit.
It's like a pit stop in space.
Exactly. So
you can see branding now going on. Shell in space.
I'm for sure Shell. But they say that for the shuttle to carry that much gas, it needs a lot of propellant. And the cost is very, very high. But if you can use half of that here on Earth, and then you go into space, and then you refuel in space, then the cost goes a lot way down.
What about the faster internet, though? I understand about the cleaner planet, but faster internet?
Faster internet, because he says that it will help to solve a major resource problem. So within a couple of decades, the system of satellites and fiber optics that we have will not be able to keep up with the demand for wireless and internet data. One solution is to build antennas in space that are made from metals from the asteroids that are not sold on Earth. So it'll remain in space and it'll transmit data down to the digital market that we have here. And some
of these space towers.
Space towers. Space and antennas.
Space antennas that is made from materials we mine from space.
From the asteroids.
Wow.
Yeah. So we don't have to lift anything from here. We don't have to bring anything back. We just mine it in space. We build it in space. And then we use it in space as well.
We're so close to becoming an intergalactic species.
Oh, yeah. I think we already are. It's just that we don't know what to do. We're just floating around and, you know, making YouTube videos. Some of the researchers are also looking into making solar energy in space with within this century, because it'll be cheaper than doing it on Earth. The energy can be beamed to Earth using microwaves. Moving most of the energy sector into space will free the planet from all the effects of the energy generation. Solar and wind power take up land, and if those are done in space, then the space down here can be freed up, so we will have more land and we won't burden the Earth, basically. So we do all the electricity, solar, wind power generation in space, and then we just beam it down. That's our only import.
You know, I'm a bit torn when I hear things like this, because one is, you know, clearly we've destroyed Earth to a certain degree, right? And space is, it's such a beautiful mass of just black space because it's untouched by us, right?
Yeah. It's uncharted territory.
It's uncharted territory. And then now we feel like, oh, to repair Earth, we could actually do this, this. Could you imagine just how messy it would be for the person who flies on the Virgin Galactic, where, you know, you could see Earth from space, and then all you see is just mining rigs all over, and, you know,
like a Mad Max
it's
thing.
It's a Mad Max thing. Yeah, yeah. China's trying to build like a giant space laser to, you know, destroy space junk, and then you've got these guys who are mining asteroids, and you're going to just look at something from Mad Max. It's just in space.
There's a petrol station.
Because for the petrol shuttle, station.
Yeah, petrol station.
Yeah, I'm like, oh,
maybe you buy something from the petrol mart.
I don't know if I want that. You know, I want my experience in space to be exactly what I think it is, just like a void. It's
of nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. But he's saying that we'll be safer here if we can do it. I mean, and he's saying that if we don't do it, then we'll have slower internet in the future. So
I don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I guess space has to go.
That's the only solution then, to go to space.
Go to space. And
I mean,
then
no man has gone before.
Yeah. I don't mind the antenna in space. I'm just thinking about generating like the solar power in space and then beaming it down here. That is so... I don't even know how that... These are like science fiction books.
Death Star.
Someone's building something.
Someone's building something.
It's not for solar energy.
Of course. Yeah, you're building something in space, and then you remember how the blueprint of the Death Star, and you know, and some of the images that we see in the movies, and you go like,
that's no moon.
I'm just shaking my head in the corner here because you know it's a Friday when we're talking about Death Star and Shell in space and space antennas and space towers.
We didn't link Shell and the Death Star in space. We didn't say anything.
And we didn't start the show talking about robotic swans as well. So,
You know,
so clearly we're all on the Friday path here. All right. We'll continue the Enterprise Biz Bytes after this. BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back to the Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Audrey Raj.
Audrey!
Yes.
It is that time where, you know, we start the new year and we do, you know, we kind of do spring cleaning in towards the end of December. I haven't done mine yet, but I plan to do mine during the Chinese New Year holiday. But there's also a new kind of spring cleaning we need to do.
Yes, yes. I totally agree. Now, I've been thinking about removing Facebook, just deactivating my account.
Because the
only reason why
some people have just stopped their car and go, what?
Screech a bit.
Just screeching a bit. Whoa, hang on a minute.
I don't know. I just don't find it relevant anymore. Not to myself.
Mark Zuckerberg is listening.
Yeah, well, you know, Mark, here's what I think.
Yes.
The thing is that with the new changes to the Facebook newsfeed layout, right, where you're just going to see more of what your family and your friends put up, and not so much. I used Facebook as like my main source for news. Like I wanted to know what was happening, what my friends were sharing, what my family was into, you know, the kind of articles that they were reading. But you're not going to get that anymore with Facebook, right? So what do I need Facebook for? Me personally, I felt like, oh, you know, maybe it's time I just, you know, take a break.
Because to know what your family is talking about, you just jump onto your WhatsApp group, right? Because, you know.
Oh, yes, yes. But that...
Everyone has a family WhatsApp group, and it's just full of spam.
2,000 unread messages so far.
It's just spam inside there,
correct,
right?
Correct. So, you know, it just got me thinking about what are the other apps that I could delete from my smartphone, you know? So the number of apps a person has and uses on their phone keeps growing. You know, there's
Don't
always
ask
a
me
new
how many
app.
I have.
Yeah, well, on average, I think there was a study that was done somewhere mid last year by App Annie. They say that an average user has between 60 and 90 apps on their phone, but only 9 of them they use daily. Now, Jeff, you're making faces. How many apps do you think you use a day?
I use about 10 to 12 apps a day, which is quite average, but I clearly have more apps installed. I think I've got about 150 apps or more installed.
Oh, my. Yeah.
How much space do you have?
I have to get like the highest spec, and I got an SD card. So I've got a 64 gig S8 Plus, and I have a 64 micro SD card slot inside the phone as well. Yeah.
You see? Okay, I'll come to that in a minute, all right? So, well, the thing is, with the rise in app usage every day, it's also resulted in a rise in smartphone addiction.
Yes.
Now, this is a real thing, and it is a dangerous thing. Now, to combat it, you can try to ditch your phone and see if you're really addicted to it. See how long you can keep away from your phone, you know. So that's just try a little digital detox yourself.
Wow.
Or you could do a less drastic thing and just like cull some of the apps on your phone, right? And see, okay, you know, if you can live with a little less. So the first kind of apps that you should be deleting from your phone are apps that depress you. So social media apps, they are great for sharing your life.
Instagram, yes. Go away. I can't stand you, Instagram.
That's the thing, right? We all know how it makes us feel. So when we get those likes, there's a little bit of dopamine. But then again, most of the time, it's kind of depressing because everyone else seems to be living such a...
And on their yachts and, you know, taking pictures on the top of some towers and traveling all the time.
Some mountains.
And I'm like, did you just travel all the time? Or like...
I wonder how some people go on solo trips but then have photos of themselves on solo trips.
It's not a solo trip.
You're talking about Richard here, right?
Hi, Rich. We miss you. So the social media apps that make you feel depressed, they've got to go. Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. And if you find they are really depressing you, just cull it, baby. Cull it.
Big call.
Yes.
All right.
All right. So now, next one. Apps that waste your time. Now, you most probably think that you don't spend much time on your smartphone, right? But you probably underestimate how much time you waste on your smartphone, according to a recent British study. Now, this study says that an average person spends about 23 days a year, or that's 3.9 years of their life, staring at their smartphone. Now, do you really want to waste 4 years of your life staring at your smartphone?
That's actually a small number. I thought it would be like a lot worse.
This is staring at your phone, not doing anything, or
wasting time just staring
at your phone. So four not doing anything at all.
Yeah,
just staring at it.
Four full years looking at your phone. Okay,
yeah, and then not doing anything about it. I've experienced this before, where I'm looking at my phone and I'm trying to think, what was I supposed to do?
Oh, yeah, just like swiping.
And I'm just swiping, and then I'm back on Facebook, but I don't want to go on Facebook. Yep. Then I get out, and I'm on Instagram. We're like, Instagram, everything's been seen, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my phone. I'm just looking at my phone.
Yeah.
There you go.
Maybe I'm trying to avoid someone, I don't know, like, you know.
So, I mean, what are some of the biggest time-wasting apps on your phone? Well, you named a few there, and especially when you spoke about the swiping, right?
Yeah.
Some people say Tinder is a waste of time because you're not going to actually meet all these people that you are swiping right to meet, right?
Yeah. Well, when I was trying out Tinder, when it came out, to just know what it is and, you know, it's being a show on Tech Talk and stuff, so... I remember just going on it just to simply just swipe.
See what happens.
Yeah. Well, not really just to see what happens, just killing time. Just had nothing to do. Just went on and like, I wonder who else is on Tinder. And just swipe. And then I meet my friend and I go like, ha-ha, I found you. Screenshot, send over.
Then you've got like apps like Candy Crush.
Oh, God, yeah. Frida, please. Delete.
There's another one. And what about like Reddit, where you're just constantly arguing with people you don't know?
Reddit is an amazing platform, but you can get lost into it and you will never get out once you get lost into Reddit.
It's like a black hole.
It's a black hole. Richard and I'm sure Arvin, you too.
It's a black hole for your time, guys. So, you know, if you spend too much time on it, maybe it's time to...
I've lost a lot of sleep because of Reddit.
There you go. All right. So
arguing against my own mind.
So the next kind of app that you should be killing off your smartphone is the kind of app that takes your money. I'm talking about Pokemon Go, Candy Crush Saga, Clash of Clans, Clash Royale, and of course your favorite shopping apps that make it just way too easy for you to browse and shop when you're bored. You know, you buy something you don't even need because, hey, it's so easy.
I will never delete Lelong on my phone. the app itself. I Lelong is just so good. And AliExpress too. Amazon as well.
I'll keep Lazada.
I can't delete them.
There you go, guys. You guys are hooked.
I'm hooked.
Yeah, I mean, no, just like last week, I wanted a mini tripod. And then I'm like, oh, where can I buy it? Went to Lazada, $10, next day, mini tripod in my hand. I didn't have to park anywhere, didn't have to drive anywhere.
I was looking for something to you know, sort of lift my laptop up to an eye level thing. Went on AliExpress, bought it within 3 weeks or so, arrived, loving it.
Yeah. So maybe do this on your desktop. Right? And not on your smartphones.
We might as well just move into caves. You know?
What is this desktop stuff? I use a laptop.
Okay, fine. So, okay. Let's move on to the next kind of app that you should kill. The final one. Apps that make you work 24/7.
Yes.
I think you guys can agree with me on this one. Smartphones, they're great. I mean, they give you virtual access to anyone, anywhere, anytime. And but it's also a bit of a pain because, you know, when you go home, sometimes you just can't leave your work at the office. You know there's going to be an email notification. Yeah. You're going to want to check what that email is. You want to, like, purge your inbox. So that right to disconnect, I think we all have to give that, a deeper think.
Do you connect your work email to your phone?
Yes, I do.
And is it synced or is it, like, you know, push or pull? Like,
it's push.
Wow. And you?
Yeah. It's connected.
Push as well?
Yeah.
Oh, so I don't. I disconnected my email, my work email, in my phone because of that separation that I just felt like I really need some separation. You know, you work in like 10 hours a day and like, just stop. Like, you know. So,
well, while you can do that as well, while you can say, okay, I'm not going to check my email and, you know, I'm not going to think about work. I'm sure you also have like some of your Microsoft Office projects
Google Drive, Google Documents
on your phone. So that's another way to constantly be working as well.
Yeah, and then there's also Slack. And nowadays people are also using WhatsApp and Telegram. You know, some work people like us, we have an enterprise WhatsApp group that, you know, we share. Thankfully, it's not much work stuff. It's just more of like, you know, how many DVDs does Arvin buy and stuff like that.
How many pairs of sneakers does Jeff have?
Not that many. But I'm just wondering here, so, you know, if we delete all these apps, the apps that depress you, apps that waste your time, apps that take your money, apps that make you work, why do you need a phone?
Ah, for GPS. Because
that was very quick,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
like
the one I can stop using the email. I don't need to check Instagram, the social media, all delete, but I will keep it for the GPS.
Get a GPS then. Why did you get a phone?
Because then you have like the bulky GPS system. You know, you can't just... Right. When I went to Singapore, so I downloaded Singapore's whole map on Google Maps.
Yeah,
so I didn't even have to take like public transport. Yeah. Singapore is so small that I could walk around anywhere. I could literally walk to the places that I wanted to go.
Right.
And I use like Google Maps. So I'm like, okay, turn right here, go right here, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm there.
There we go.
Whenever I wanted to go to like MRT station, still just there in my Google Maps.
So the next time you want a phone, you just need a GPS that looks like a phone. It's small like a phone.
Yeah, like a phone.
That can fit in your pocket as well and you'd be happy.
Yeah, and then I can use the same thing to pretend when people who I don't want to talk to just come to me. I'm like, I got a call. But it's actually just a GPS.
Yeah. That works. There you go.
It's a prop.
If you delete everything from here, like, there's no need for a phone then.
This digital detox story is completely useless to the both of you.
It doesn't work. Like, it's digital paranoia for us, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll come back with podcast highlights after this. BFM 89.9.
Breaking financial matters. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. Fun Fridays, Enterprise Biz Bytes. And let's start with the podcast essentials, because obviously every Friday before we head on to our break, we just recommend you some of the things that you should listen to in case you've missed out. Let's start with Tuesday's show.
Yeah. So on Tuesday, there was we covered a topic called Legal Calculations with Easy Law. The guest was June Lau. She is from Easy Law. Christine did this interview. So nowadays, there seems to be an app for just about everything from simple card games to real estate to food delivery.
That's digital detox.
Digital detox. Exactly what we were just talking about. But it can be difficult to not only create an app, but also to find an yet untapped area for apps as well. Jun Lau, who's the founder and managing director of Easy Law, an app attempting to revolutionize legal calculations, speaks to us about tapping into the realm of legal technology.
Interesting. Mm. All right. So you delete some old apps and then you download some new ones.
Download Easy Law. Yeah. Just Easy Law and GPS.
And GPS too. That's what's happening on the Wednesday. What do we have?
On Wednesday, on Her Vantage, Frida spoke to Tan Sri Rebecca Fatima Santa Maria. This episode was called The Smell of Home, based on a book that she just wrote. So now, after more than 35 years in the civil service, serving 6 trade ministers and overseeing 12 trade pacts, Tan Sri Rebecca retired as the Secretary General of MITI in July 2016. Now, she observed the people of Malaysia being divided into minorities and the majorities, and decided to write a book about being Malaysian with elements of women, leadership, special occasions, and of course, what we Malaysians love. Food. So Tan Sri Rebecca also spoke about her new book, The Smell of Home, and what inspired her to actually pen down her thoughts.
The Smell of Home. You can search that on the BFM app. Also, if you heard the earlier show today at 10 o'clock, I was talking to Matt Armitage, and we did a show of Matt-splaining on ratings. And ratings, when I mean ratings, is like, you know how when you go on Amazon or you go on Lazada or you know, any of these, even Uber and Grab, you always have a rating system. Any digital platform has a rating system. Yep. And don't you feel like, you know, it's come to a point where, you know, 5 stars have become the norm. If you don't see anything that's, you know, if it's below 5 stars, for you, you're just like, it's probably not that good. But in reality, though, you know, what is actually 5 stars? If 5 is the best, 5 means you're super outstanding. 4 means you're good.
3 is
you're
average.
Or you're all right. I mean, you're not bad, you're all right. 2 is you may be good, but just didn't quite cut it. And 1 is bad, and 0 is just you're horrible, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when we go online, we look for 5-star ratings, but clearly, is there really everything is just amazingly good? I've experienced some things where, you know, it's a 5-star rating, but it was clearly not 5-star enough for me. Like, it's just probably a 3 or a 2.
Are we Asians being too generous with our stars?
It could be as well, so, right? So, you know, we and also some of these things could dictate how we make purchases or we, you know, go into these things, right? So, you know, we may have fallen into a trap where everyone is giving a 5-star rating to this item, and hence we feel like, maybe we should get that item. But in hindsight, you may be better off with a different item, right? So nowadays, rating seems to dictate our lives. So
yeah,
find out, you know, on the show, me and Matt, we even spoke about in China. They are coming up, you know, Alipay is coming up with a whole new system where, you know, every rating, even what your friends do, affects your credit score. And everything's in place where, you know, if you have a circle of friends and one of your friends just kind of like dropped the ball on something, maybe, you know, like has like a bad credit rating or something like that, it's affecting your own score as well, because it's a connected world.
Yeah, I mean, look at Rotten Tomatoes. But people want to go watch movies, they go see Rotten Tomatoes, but they still, you don't understand how that site works. It's an aggregate score, you know. Not everyone gave it 98% or 95%. It's just they gave it positive, negative. So that is another thing. And then like it's a review site, but people use it on their DVD covers nowadays.
Yeah.
So that's how important ratings
are. It's become a measure of, you know, success. And, you know, if you're in a ride-sharing app, if you get into one of those, I've experienced where before you get down from the car at your destination, the driver will just turn around and say, it's like, boss, give me 5-star. Yeah?
Yes. Happens all the time.
Well, so anyways, if you want to know more about, you know, ratings and how it's dictating our lives, and then you got to download the Matt-splaining episode of ratings. It was aired today at 10 o'clock. Anyways, we've come to the end of our show. As usual, we will, you know, wrap up some of the things that we talked about. We began with
Singapore deploying robotic swans to monitor water quality in their reservoirs.
And then, of course, Google, they want to make building an AI algorithm is as easy as just drag and drop.
Yep, and then we spoke about how if you want faster internet and you want a cleaner planet, then you have to start shooting asteroids or start mining asteroids for their materials.
And Audrey.
Yes, then we spoke about your digital detox. 17 smartphone apps to delete. Jeff and Arvin are obviously not going to delete any apps from their smartphones.
I'm not participating in this detox program.
The rest of you out there, you know, purge, people, please.
Might as well take the phone, drop it in the dustbin. It's done. There's so much to delete.
Yes, delete everything. Delete apps
that depress you, waste your money,
waste your time.
Make you work 24/7.
So I really want to question this. So why do you need a phone if you're going to delete all these things? So
you boys are awful.
You have a window. Aim your phone at the window, and whoop, it's gone.
Don't try that at home, please, because then we will get like some feedback saying that Arvin told me to do this on Enterprise.
Open the window first.
Yeah, that will make it much better. Anyways, that's all for today's show. Later on at 1 o'clock, we do have the Breakfast Grill replay. U.S. President Donald Trump marks his first tumultuous year in the office on 20th of January 2018. So how have the Trump administration policies impacted the global balance of powers, particularly in the Asia-Pacific region? Well, we've got Morning Run has the panel of experts. It's Elina Noor. She's the Director of Foreign Policy and Security Studies in the ISIS Malaysia. And also Dr. Subramaniam Pillai. He's the economist. That will be happening at 1 o'clock. And if you missed any parts of the show, you can download the BFM app. It's available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Audrey Raj and also Arvin Yuvaraj, the two Raj.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Happy Friday, guys.
Happy Friday. Enjoy the weekend. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.